Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 116.
Oh, we did. That's kind of cool.
We did. But it's not Friday, so it's okay.
Still good luck.
Yeah. So, I have to do my language for the day.
Yep.
Okay, let's do Brazilian Portuguese.
Okay.
Okay. Bom dia. Yeah. Do we have any listeners in Brazil?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, well, that was for them then. Ooh. Yay. Okay, we have a new contributor today.
We do.
It's Ron in Knoxville, Tennessee.
And who else are we hearing from today?
We are hearing from Tony in New York, and Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Tom in Provo here in Utah.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
In fact, we have a voice message in there too, not just emails.
Yeah, yes. I think Tom's contribution is a voice message today, so...
Yay. Alrighty, let's dive in. We'll start with Ron.
Welcome, Ron.
Yes, it's always lovely to have new contributors.
It is indeed.
And he says, after moving and having to downsize my tank to a 20-gallon, I'm finally getting to set up a larger tank. This time it will be a heavily planted 40-gallon breeder. Along the way, I've kept fish of all sizes. Rather than getting back into big fish like rams and rainbows, I'm currently more interested in large schools of small schooling fish. Right now, I have 10 harlequins, 5 corys, an otto, and the four remaining cardinal tetras. I've kept cardinal since early on in the hobby, and had as many as 15 at one time, but they've always been shy, and would just hide in the plants, coming only out to feed. The harlequins are a recent addition, and I really like them. They are active and school well. I'm sold on the harlequins and plan on getting more, to raise the numbers to around 20, and would like to get another larger group of schooling fish. I'm wary of getting more cardinals. They are beautiful, but I think they will just continue to hide and not be much fun. Is there anything to do to make them feel safer, other than increase their numbers? I've tried that, and more likely to free swim. If it's not more cardinals, I'm considering neon tetras, green neons, and black neons. I'd be interested to know if you have any preference between them, and if they won't be as shy as the cardinals. Any other recommendations for a good color complement to the harlequins would be appreciated.
That's a good question. An excellent contribution today. Well, let's address the first thing first, I guess, the idea of the cardinals and how to get them to be less shy. I'll tell you what I have done with cardinals. I got cardinal, they had a great sale on cardinals a few years back, before we lived here. And
were we in Hawaii?
No, it was after. We were in Orem.
Okay.
Yeah. And the cardinals were shy, as you mentioned. I had a nice planted tank for them, and they were beautiful, but they were kind of trying to hide out, and they were very skittish, and I was kind of bummed about it, and I thought, what we really need here is some dither fish. And the thing is, cardinals like fairly warm water, neon tetras like fairly cool water, but there is an overlap point where both of them will do fairly well. I had my tank at around 78, I think, and at that, it's a little on the high side for neon preferences, a little on the low side for cardinal preferences.
They do okay.
So I put 4 or 5 neons in.
Before you go any further, explain to us what a dither fish is.
Oh.
Other than a fun phrase to say.
Okay. Well, a dither fish is a fish that you add, or a group of fish that you add to a tank because there's some shy and skittish fish in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And when you add the dither fish, they're a little bit more outgoing, and so the other fish, the shyer fish, feel as if they can be a little more outgoing.
And they see them coming out of hiding and not getting eaten by anything?
Right, basically. Uh-huh. And they're not to be confused with target fish, which is when you put fish into kind of take aggression. Say you want to breed fish and you have a pair, and the pair are being too aggressive with each other.
Uh-huh.
So you put in some target fish, and they tend to point their aggression towards those other fish. So it's not the same. They're sometimes used interchangeably, but they're not the same.
Okay.
So dither fish, yeah, are basically there to say, oh, everything's cool. They're doing fine. Maybe I'll do fine. And then they do that. So I thought, I'm going to put a few neons in there. I put about 5 or 6 neons in with the 9 cardinals, and voila, it worked.
So that's a good idea.
The cardinals, within hours, as far as I can recall, they were a lot more outgoing because they'd follow the neons.
So the neons as dither fish really encouraged them to come out of hiding and play in the open.
Right. It worked like a charm. And like I say, you have to be careful with the temperatures because the cardinals like warmer temperatures, neons like cooler. But if you get that happy medium, it seemed to work fine for me. It worked really well.
Are they okay with, like, other water conditions, like pH and stuff. They're pretty similar, so they're fine together?
Fairly similar with okay. pH and so on. Uh-huh. I had the homemade CO2 injection, so the water was a little on the... it wasn't actually on the acid side, but it was more acid than the water came out of the tap. The pH was around low 7s.
Okay.
Which they can adapt to, and they did fine, and they colored up incredibly in that water, and they were all happy.
Well, it's a good thing to try, and it's not exactly increasing the numbers of the cardinals, it's just...
Right.
I guess it is increasing the numbers of fish in the tank.
Right. And it's true that, you know, you get enough cardinals in a big enough tank, mm-hmm. and they will be out in the open more.
What kind of numbers do they need?
It depends on a lot of conditions in the tank, how much plant cover there is, how big the tank is, and all that kind of stuff, but... You know, when people put 60, 80 of them together, they
also like a lot.
Well. But
that would be really striking, though, in a nice big tank.
Tanks like that look amazing.
Yeah.
But, and of course, it sounds like he's got a lot of plant cover in there, so that doesn't seem to be the issue. But I think the neons will help if you just.
Yeah, that
you can keep
like
the temperature
at
about
try.
Right around 78.
Okay, well, let's talk about his neon options, if he mm-hmm. decides to go that way. He says he's considering neon tetras, green neons, and black neons. Mm-hmm. Are those all tetras, or these
they're
other
all tetras,
neons?
Yes.
Okay.
They're all kerosens.
Okay.
I haven't kept green neons.
What are the difference between them?
Green neons, it's kind of a misnomer, because to me, at least, they look fairly similar in color, but they're different in the way how their stripe looks and how far their stripe goes, their little iridescent stripe. And
black neons?
Black neons are basically, you know, their body is much darker. They don't have the same kind of blue and red thing going on. It's more like black with an iridescent stripe. Okay. And I've kept those, too. I haven't kept the green neons, but I've kept normal neons, and I've kept black neons. I haven't kept black neons for so long, though.
Mm-hmm. It's been a while.
It's been a really long time, I'd be hesitant to say, but neons are certainly a little bit more outgoing than the cardinals, like we've mentioned before, so that would be a good choice. And they blend well together because, you know, the idea is that neon tetras, at least one of the ideas out there, is that neon tetras are a mimic species mm-hmm. of cardinals.
The green and the black, not so much. Because they have different colors, right? So just
right. Well, maybe the green ones. Maybe the green ones, but not so much the black ones. Because the green neons aren't really green. They're more like neons. They just call them that. I mean, in some lights, I guess they look kind of green, but they have the same basic color pattern.
Okay. So if he wanted to, he could use either the green or the straight neon tetras as the Ditherfish, and then he'd have them both.
Well, I can't say for sure, because I haven't tried it with green neons, but normal neons would work. At least work for me.
Tetras have worked in the past.
They worked for me, yeah.
Okay. If he decides to just do neons,
mm-hmm.
what would your preference be between those? And
well, I think it'd probably be easier to find normal neons.
Okay.
It's true that they're not the hardiest of fish. You definitely want to quarantine them first.
Okay.
When you get them at the shops, you know, a lot of times they're not doing all that well, and it takes a little while to get them back to doing well. But I've kept neons several times in different setups, and as long as you get them, you get healthy ones, and you make sure they stay healthy, they do really well. They just have to get past that first little hump. And you don't want to put them in a new tank, which doesn't sound like he's doing. He's going to do a heavily planted tank, which will help a lot, too. You never want to put neons in a tank that's too new. And I'm not talking about one that's... Of course you don't want to put them in an uncycled tank, but I'm not even going to go there because that's a bad idea. But what I mean is you want to make sure the tank has been established for some time, not just cycled, but cycled it's and then established.
Cycled and healthy.
Where you put them in. And it sounds like since he's going to do a heavily planted tank, he'll probably have that set up and be going for a while before he puts them in anyway.
Are there any behavioral differences between these neons that you know of?
I don't.
They all pretty
because,
much act like neons.
Well, I could say, I know that neon tetras themselves are kind of sedentary. They're not as active as some other fish. They tend to
How
hang out in a spot.
Are they compared to the cardinals? Like you said, they're definitely less shy.
Less shy. They're out in the open more.
Okay.
They do tend to kind of pick a spot that they like
uh-huh.
and hang out there more so than a lot of other
like
fish that are more active
and
swim around.
These are my 6 inches that I'm going
to stay in. And they'll stay there for a while. And not that they'll do that all the time. I mean, like when I would change the water on my tank in Hawaii, they'd go crazy. They loved it. And they'd start spawning like almost every time I change the water. They get that fresh water in there, and it would stimulate them to spawn, and they just go nuts. And that was, they were really active during that time. And they'll be really active when you feed them, too, and so on. But they're just, they're not the most active tetra. There are other more active tetras than neons. Black neons, like I said, it's been so long since I've kept them that I would hesitate to make a whole lot of generalizations about it. If anybody out there has kept black neons recently, if you want to give us some insights into that, that would help. You know, or green neons, because I just haven't kept them, so I don't know what to say as far as they go.
But definitely not as shy as the cardinals.
Yeah. I would hazard to guess that neither of any of those three species would be that shy.
And he asked for any other recommendations for a good color complement to the harlequins. Remind me what a harlequin looks like, because I know I've seen them, but right. I can't think of it right
harlequin
now.
Harlequin rasboras are the ones with a kind of a dark triangle in the latter half of their body.
Okay.
They're beautiful, and there are a couple other...
Like pink or red or something in the front sometimes?
I'm asking a colorblind guy.
I'm sorry.
They're beautiful fish. I think the triangle is kind of purpley. I'm not entirely certain.
Okay, I think I remember
sure
it being more black.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm colorblind. It's beautiful. They're beautiful fish. They school tightly. Like he's saying, I echo all his sentiments. I have kept them. I like them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of color complement, Kelly has to help me decide which clothes I can wear together. Because of the color thing, not that I can't see color, but I have a really hard time matching.
The shades
things.
Don't work the same way for him.
So, I wish
I
could tell you.
Well, they have white underneath their black, though, don't they?
I wouldn't say white. They have
fish color. Generic fish color.
Let me show you a picture.
Okay. We'll be right back. Okay, so Russ showed me the pictures. I remember them, though. So, it is black, the little triangle.
Is it?
Yes,
really?
it's black. And they have kind of like a silver-white belly and red fins. And some of them in the pictures had like red, like a red stripe going down their back all the way from their head down to their tail. So I guess it would depend on what you mean by complementary. If you mean like complementary colors, green is complementary color to red if there's something
green.
But
then if he has a heavily planted tank, then he's already got that.
It's going to pop anyways, yeah. So if you want something that's also black and red and white... What kind of other fish are black and red and white? I shouldn't ask you that.
No,
I'm
sorry. Colorblind.
But it's, I don't know. I think the cardinals or the neons would probably look really nice with those.
You think? Cool. Mm-hmm. And so if anybody's kept harlequin rasboras with something that they like, please send us a message or something and let us know what works so that we can let Rob know about it.
And thank you for contributing, Rob.
Yep, and sorry that my colorblind has kind of gotten in the way there a little bit, but hopefully there's some good information there. And we're glad to have you aboard as an aquariumaxer.
Yes. Before we go to Tony, why don't we go ahead and take our break?
Okay.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquariumax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquariumax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquariumax.com. Now, back to the Aquariumax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nell.
All right, let's go to Tony's email. He says, the discussion of snakeheads on last week's show got me thinking again about my fish room daydream. As of late, I have been wondering if native fishes would be a good idea for a fish room theme. In particular, my basement drops to roughly 55 degrees Fahrenheit over the winter, but with native fishes of the northeastern USA, one could have a low temperature and happy fish with little need for space heating. I'd love to hear your thoughts on native fishes in the aquarium and any advice for someone who might want to learn more. If you have any favorites suitable for small tanks, do mention that as well.
Oh, okay.
He's got other stuff to say too, but that's on a different topic, so let's do
this
part.
Okay, let's handle this topic first then. Okay. Well, native fish... there's a lot of stuff going on with native fish, and I would say definitely check out NANFA, N-A-N-F-A. You probably already have, Tony, but if any of others around there who want to know more about native fish. It's like the Native American, North American Native Fish
Association.
Fish Association, something like that. Anyway, it's big, and they've got a big archive online of all kinds of stuff.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting, and you can find out a lot. I would say, well, 55 can be good for quite a number of the fish, could do well there. It also depends, though, on your summer temperatures, because there are native fish out there that are pretty adaptable in terms of temperature, some of them extremely so, like the devil's hole pupfish. Not that you're probably going to keep those, but some of them can handle amazing ranges, and others are pretty sensitive and can't really handle water in the 70s. It's too warm for them. You know, it's depending on what you're keeping. But
I guess it would depend on what his basement got to.
Yeah, so for some species, you might even need to keep a chiller in the summer, depending on how warm your basement gets in the summer. But it
or
sounds
if somebody
like
wanted to do it in a normal part of their house.
Right. So it sounds like, though, you have good prospects, possibly, to look into, depending, you know, on yearly temperature fluctuation in your basement. I would say
I have a question.
Yes.
When he's asking for just thoughts on native fishes in the aquarium, and I don't know about this or not, but are there any kind of ethical arguments for or against
native
fish? I mean, all the fish we keep are native somewhere.
Right.
So
well, there are certainly some things to consider in terms of where you get the fish. You need to make sure they come through legal channels, because someone might sell them and might profess for them to be, you know, legally obtained, and they may not be. There are plenty of people who breed native fish, you know, and can get you.
How do you get legal fish? I mean, native fish legally.
Well, you have to look into it fishing quite a bit, because state laws vary a lot
on what you're allowed to keep.
Right. Some of them will say, well, go buy a fishing license, and then you're allowed to catch X number of this species.
Oh, okay.
Others say, you know, this species is prohibited to keep in the state it's native to, but you can keep it in a different state.
That's so
funny. And things like that. So then there are other fish who have been introduced from one place to another, and they're perfectly legal to catch where they've been introduced, but not where they're actually native, and, you know, things like that.
They want them out of where they've been introduced. They say, yes, take them out. Keep them however
or they
you
just
want.
They're not regulated because they're not native, or different things. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to, you know, make a generalization.
So you have to check out your state and your local.
Yes, always
guidelines.
Check out your state and local laws, of course. And I know that Tony would do that anyway, but it's a good thing to remember and talk about. Now, in terms of generally keeping them, one thing that I have heard and read is that there are a lot of them that are not particularly well suited to taking prepared foods.
Because
they just don't like it.
Because they want real food.
Yes.
They want wild food.
And I know there are exceptions to that. Certainly there are, but there are some species that just don't do well unless they get the live food, and other species that just won't eat it if it's not live food. Mm-hmm. And then there are others that that will take a while, so you can't buy them and expect them to eat flake or pellets. If you slowly wean them onto it, they'll eventually do it. And so that's one consideration. Okay. Most, you know, fish you buy at the pet store, the large majority of them, tropical fish or other exotics,
captive bred anyways,
they'll just eat, you know, what you give them, more or less. Most of them. That's also a generalization. But another thing to think about is that they sometimes need more space. They're used to more space. A lot of them need pretty fast-flowing type of environment.
How do you make that kind of current?
Well, it's
like if it's a stream fish or a river fish.
There are a couple of different ways to do it, and one of them, the basic theory behind it, is that if you get a fairly long tank and you put pump at one end, and then you put a hose attached to that pump that goes over to the other side of the tank, and the name's a spray bar, so that you're circulating the water from one side of the tank to the other kind of constantly, and you aim the spray bar so it kind of makes it into a circuit of water, that can help with that, to make them feel like they're in a stream. Of course, not all fish come from fast-flowing streams. There are lots of lake fish and pond fish and things too, but if you're looking into ones that live there, you can consider doing that to make a tank that kind of fits that model.
Okay.
Let's see. What else? Oh, he asked about small native fish that you can keep, right? I've dabbled a bit in a couple of native fish. It's been a while, but I used to keep, and I think I've mentioned this, Heterandria formosa. the least killifish, which is actually a live bearer. There are native killifish that are fairly interesting.
Where are they from?
Like, various places. There's one that's down from the southeast, the blue-finned killie. It's a beautiful little fish, but you have to keep it quite cool.
It likes it cold.
Yeah, you don't want it to get over, I think, probably 70, maybe even below that.
Oh, wow.
But if you...
So you really would need a chiller, because most people want their houses warmer than that.
Yeah, unless Tony's basement's cooler there. So I know that Tony likes killifish, so I thought I'd mention that.
Yeah.
I haven't kept a bluefin killie, but it's a beautiful little fish, and I'm quite intrigued by it. But I just don't have a place cool enough to keep it without getting a chiller, and those are expensive. So,
yeah.
But the least killifish was all kinds of fun. It's also called the eastern mosquito fish and so on. They're tiny, so for small tanks, you know.
It works well.
It works really well. I kept mine in a 2-gallon.
Oh, wow.
With a little sponge filter and a bunch of Java moss. And I had a whole little community of them going on.
Just little wee fish.
I picked about, I think I got maybe 6 of them at the pet store. And they built up a population of maybe 20 or so in that tank.
So you didn't catch them outside?
No, I didn't. I purchased them at the pet store. They don't live here.
Oh, okay.
They are southeastern
species.
And they do well at room temperatures, even if it gets a little warmer. They'll live in Florida and places like that. So they do okay when the water gets warm. They don't need really fast-flowing water. And they're really fun. I just fed them microworms and things like that, daphnium, things like that. And they also ate flake. They did fine. And they're really interesting in the way they reproduce.
What do they do?
You know, most live bearers hold a batch for a while of a fry, and they all grow up, and then they release those fry at the same time, and then they start another batch. You know, and most live bearers that we're familiar with, the Poecilids at least, they can be fertilized by a male once, and then they might have 5, 6, 7, 8 broods of young based on that one fertilization, but it's each batch of eggs comes at the same time. The least killifish, or eastern mosquito fish, does something differently. It's called superfetation, kind of like kangaroos. You know, a kangaroo can have a baby in its pouch that's just has its head poking out and is ready to leave, can have a much smaller one in there that is already born, and then it can be pregnant at the same time.
That's pretty crazy, huh?
And they do the same thing.
Okay.
So they'll give birth to maybe 3 or 5 young one day, and then a couple days later they'll give birth to another batch.
A different batch.
Wow. And they're developing at a different rate and so on. So there were always one or two little fry zipping around that tank.
That's pretty amazing.
And since I kept them well fed, they did well. They didn't eat each other, and the Java moss was growing in there, kept them all healthy, and they felt like they could hide. It was fun. Then when I left the country, some well-meaning individual said, oh, I'm going to consolidate and put my tank of mosquito fish in with some bigger fish.
Oh, poor mosquito fish.
Yeah, it didn't quite work out after that. So, it's been a while, but they were a lot of fun.
So that would be a good option for a smaller tank then.
Yeah, and they're not really brightly colored, but they're attractive little fish. I liked them. They were fun. And they're really diminutive. The males are like 3/4 of an inch long.
Like guppy size?
Smaller.
Oh, wow.
The males don't really get much more than 3/4 of an inch.
Teeny.
And the females, barely over an inch maybe. They're quite a bit smaller than guppies.
What are the ones that we see in the ponds around here? Is it Gambusia?
Gambusia, yeah.
And that's something different.
That is something different.
Okay.
Part of the confusion is they're also referred to as mosquito fish.
Just because they eat mosquitoes?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But they're not
so that may be something nice to have out in the pond in the summer.
Yeah, a lot of people use them for that mosquito abatement, and now they're well established around here, even though they're not native here. They're also southeastern fish, basically, but they live here all over the place. In fact, Tom and Provo sent a message about that recently. It's a more local thing, but it was kind of it was cool. He got a picture of some fish of a bird that was visiting the area, catching them. Well, he didn't get the picture, but he shared the pictures with me.
Oh,
someone
okay.
else.
Have we put those up? Is that from this week or?
That's this week. He was saying that maybe it's more a local interest thing. Uh-huh. But I just thought since we're talking about mosquito fish, I could bring that up.
Oh, well,
hopefully
we
that's
it up
okay,
anyways.
Tom.
Everybody would probably think it was cool to just
that's
see.
It's probably true.
Yeah, let's
there's
put
some
it up
cool
on the
pictures.
Facebook page or something.
This fish was catching the Gambusias from near the lake somewhere, or a river. I can't remember
Lake?
Exactly if it was the lake or the river or something like that. But
yeah. Okay, well, hopefully those are some helpful thoughts.
Yeah, hopefully so. Thank you, Tony. You always have good stuff.
That was a good topic.
Mm-hmm.
Could probably talk quite a bit more on that sometime. He has a note for Juliet,
mm-hmm.
too. He says, Juliet, My red cherry shrimp are not producing offspring either, so I have been researching it. Recently, I found out that they prefer a high temperature in the tank for mating, in particular 25 to 30 degrees Celsius, which is 77 to 86 degrees Fahrenheit, is recommended on sites I've read. For those that live in warm weather, this weather that's probably never comes up, I've cranked the temperature in my aquarium to 25.5, or about 78, in my aquarium. Previously, I had it at 22/72 to see what happens. I've also begun removing those lead plant weights from my aquarium, since the lead might also have a detrimental effect. There you go, that's interesting. Fall of Rome and all that, you know. I have not altered the photo period as of yet, but thought I'd offer you these ideas in hopes that they give you the solution you're looking for.
That's some great things to think about.
Yeah, those are some good hints. Hopefully one of those will be effective and helpful.
Yeah, and this is an interesting thing, because I've never thought about this. I have kept red cherry shrimp and other color varieties, color morphs of the same species, at cooler temperatures than they've bred. But right now, the tank where they're breeding like crazy is about 80 or over.
Yeah, because the weather's warmed up. But even right there in the window.
That tank, I've had it at that temperature. Not that temperature. It's getting warmer now, so that it's going above what the heater's doing. But it's been around 80 for months.
It didn't really go down in the winter because we had the heater on it.
Because we had the heater on it. It was around 80, and they didn't do much when it was, you know, the dead of winter anyway, but they're doing a lot now.
That's true.
And it may have something to do with photo period and temperature. I don't know, but that's a great point that you bring up, Tony. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Hopefully it helps, Juliet.
Sorry, guys. I have a cold, so if I keep coughing and things, you'll have to just be patient with me. Okay, Mick has something for us, too.
Yeah.
He says, I just wanted to share with you my latest achievement.
This is pretty cool.
I went to my fish club meeting last week and was awarded my first certificate in the new breeders program we have launched. I have enclosed a picture being presented by good friend and program coordinator John Dean, who has been a superb help in getting me going again after losing lots of stock in my heating failure last year. I also won second prize for pairs with my Beta Rubra and third place for Breeders Fry in the club show table. It must have been my lucky night, as I also won a prize in the raffle, the first time in 3 years.
Wow.
That's exciting. Yeah. He didn't say what he won, though.
Very successful night, though.
Yeah. We also had a talk from Mike Wise, a pisto expert from some place called the USA. Have we heard of that place?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound familiar.
We'll put it up on the show page.
Okay, you should mark it on the map or something, because me and geography. Just kidding. So this is a really great speaker. I've included pictures of the beta pair in my 4-spot Merry Widows in the show, and a link to the club's Facebook page.
Cool. Well, congratulations, Mick, on all of those counts.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
We'll definitely put up the pictures on the show page so everybody can check it out. That's pretty cool.
That is exciting.
Yeah. So he's got a picture of, there's Mick and John Dean, I think his name is, awarding the certificate, and then he's got pictures of his fish.
Okay.
So we'll put those up on the show page so you can check them out.
I see those.
Mm-hmm.
Our last contributor today is Tom in Provo, who has an audio message for us. So let's listen to it.
Russ, Kelly, and Aquarimaxers everywhere. Thanks to all for the comments regarding keeping beginner fish. I won't let that bother me anymore, although I'll probably not post about my endlers on monsterfishkeeper.com should I start raising endlers. I'll also look into the possibility of keeping killies. That sounds like an excellent suggestion. Let me say, too, that I particularly enjoyed Kelly's comment that I should probably worry more about swirlies than wedgies, since the former are more aquatic. The main thing I wanted to say is that one of the things I enjoy about Aquarimax is its international audience. I've heard contributions from England, France, Australia, Sweden, Denmark, Argentina, and undoubtedly other locations that I've overlooked. Russ, do you track the countries from which there have been contributions? I'd be interested to hear how many different countries people have contributed from, or how many different countries people have downloaded from. At one point, I believe you said that there was a large number of Aquarimax downloads in Russia, and I have since hoped that we would hear from someone there. No doubt the Russians who download the podcast understand English. Otherwise, it would seem very strange for them to be downloading it. Still, with your permission, I would like to greet our Russian friends in my rudimentary Russian and tell them we're glad they listened and invite them to tell us about their aquariums. So here we go. Наши русские друзья, мы рады, что вы слушаете Aquarmax. Пожалуйста, расскажите нам о вашем аквариуме по электронной почте или в прикрепленном MP3. Большое спасибо. I apologize for my bad Russian, but I hope this encourages contributions, not only from Russia, but from yet other parts of the world. And I would say to potential contributors, don't feel that your English needs to be perfect. My Russian most certainly isn't. Many thanks to all for the podcast, for your contributions, and for the opportunity to participate. Tom in Provo.
I love that. That was so cool, fun. I didn't know you spoke Russian, Tom. That's very cool.
Yeah, that's a unique contribution that I'm sure our Russian listeners will appreciate as we do.
And so hopefully they respond and write in. That would be really great.
Aquarmaxers in Russia. Mm-hmm. Well,
his question, he asked if you tracked the contributions from other countries. I don't know that we've ever made a list.
We ought to.
We should.
It might be kind of hard to go through and figure out where all of them have been from, because we've had quite a few.
You do track where the listeners are, like where the downloads
are. Right. Periodically, I do look up the downloads. And maybe what we should do is, I haven't done it this week. It's probably been a little while since I've done it, in fact. But what we can do is, for next week, why don't we, before the show, I'll look up the recent downloads.
We'll see where they're at.
Right. We'll see where they're at and see which countries have been.
Start like a little spreadsheet and see,
see where everybody's from.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
That'll be fun.
So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. We'll try to do that for next week. Just see where the recent downloads have been from.
Because I think that's something that's very fun about this show, too, that I really enjoy is getting to hear from people all over the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I like it's very cool.
It's a fun aspect.
Yeah.
So, will you remind me to do that for next week?
I will remind you to do that.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
And I hope they listen. I understood about two of those words in Russian.
Yeah, I understood Aquarmax and aquariums.
I understood shto and spasiba. I can't say them right, but
what is shto mean?
It means who, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, because I know how to say who, me. Shto, vi. I think that's how you say it. Yeah.
Should we tell them really fast before we go about our little Christmas in May possibility?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's do that. Okay.
Okay, we
had our neighbor.
Yeah.
Just out of the blue said, do you guys want a 100-gallon aquarium?
With a bunch of African cichlids in it?
So.
She said, they keep having babies, and I don't know what to do with them, and I don't want to deal with it anymore, so you can have it for free.
A 100-gallon aquarium.
We said, twist my arm a little harder.
So, the thing is, we're going to be moving soon.
Yes, we have to move within the next few weeks, and we're still not quite sure where we're going to.
Yeah, it's a remodeling issue at this house, and so it came up rather suddenly. But we're going to see if that's going to work out. Hopefully, we may just have to get rid of this 55 so we have a place to put the 100
count.
That's okay.
We can swap a 55 out for 100, right?
Yeah, that sounds good. I've never had 100 before.
For free!
For free. Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty amazing.
So, we're excited about that.
Yeah. So, we'll keep you posted on if we get to adopt it.
Yeah. Oh, there's another thing.
Remember
my hypothesis from yesterday about the bristlenose?
Yeah.
This is an observation I'm making, and kind of put together a hypothesis. Okay. I've mentioned in recent shows about putting an African dwarf frog in the 20-gallon in our room because of the amphipods that were going nuts and eating all the plants. And I believe I've also mentioned that it has had a pronounced positive effect, that the amphipods have decreased.
They have.
Markedly.
It's very nice.
And that the plants are now
doing happier.
Better. Like the Amazon frogbit was just taking a beating up at the top of the tank. All these holes riddled in it. It was like Swiss Amazon frogbit.
Yeah.
It was not looking so good. But the frog has been eating lots of amphipods and reduced the problem. But here's something. You know, the different layers of substrate have different levels of oxygen and other things that go on, and all sorts of chemical processes that are different because of that, and biological processes that are different because of the levels of oxygen. Anyway, I was observing the substrate, which is about half to three-fourths black fluorite, and then the rest of it is black gravel at the surface. And this is what I have observed. The layer of detritus that, you know, down at the bottom provides an area, especially in low oxygen conditions, where a lot of the minerals will become available to the roots of the plants from the black fluorite. Okay? That level, it doesn't seem that the amphipods penetrate that level very often, probably because it's lower in oxygen, and so not a very good place for them to hang out. Anyway, I was looking and noticing that a couple of things. One, there's a little bit of turbidity to the water. It's not too bad, but you always see a few little particles floating around because the pair of bristlenose plecos I have, and they're always kicking around and digging things around and generally just
making
a fuss that kicks little particles up into the water, and the filter picks up, you know, quite a number, but they're constantly doing it, so it doesn't take out all of them. So there's that going on. And I was watching him dig and noticing that he gets down to a uniform level all the time, and right under the level that he gets to when he digs around in the gravel is where that line of detritus is, and I never see the amphipods there. And I was wondering if his constant digging is contributing to providing a place to provide this place where the amphipods can
hide
in the gravel and hide out. I see the frog going after them.
Essentially aerating the gravel.
Yeah, this top layer, it's maybe, I don't know, 3/8 of an inch or something that he's, and of course that's going to be more aerated anyway because of the movement of the water and various other things going on.
But he's definitely helping.
But I think he's contributing to it, making it a little deeper than it otherwise would be. And he may actually be making it easier for amphipods to thrive in the tank and hide in the gravel. So even though the African frog is definitely helping, I'm wondering if I should remove and relocate those bristlenose plecos and see if that makes a difference. So far, the shrimp population is doing quite well. I'm sure the frog has gotten a few of them, but they seem to be breeding still, and most of them are surviving. So it's been a success so far. The only thing is, when I look at that tank, the slight turbidity in the water kind of annoys me. And the other thing is that it looks kind of bare from across the room. You have to get up close to it.
You can't see the shrimp from across the room. It looks like there's nothing but plants.
It looks like a nice, you know, the plants look nice, but that's what you see. You don't see anything swimming around except the, you know, the bristlenose on the bottom, or if the frog happens to appear. So I'm thinking what I could put in there, but I don't want to jeopardize the shrimp. That's the paradox there.
But we probably won't put anything in until after we move.
Yes, probably won't, because
it's just more to move.
Moving.
With fish.
So we don't want to move anyone. But this is some
fish.
The fish.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629. Or email us at info@aquarimax.com.